Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's W3C CCG meeting. Today, we're very glad to have Greg Burstyn to present on VBS for VCs, verified credentials and JSON LD. But before we get to the main agenda, just want to do some quick reminders on the Code of Ethics and Professional Conduct reminder. More or less, just make sure that we, remain respectful to each other. We've been doing that for as far as I can remember, but just want to, do a quick reminder and code note here. All right, next we have the IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. Make sure you have the W3C account and sign the W3C Community Contributor License Agreement. If you have any questions or problems, just feel free to reach out to any of the co-chairs. We record these meetings, and actually we have been quite good at publishing these meeting minutes and audio recordings in a day or two, but generally we said we'll publish by the end of this week. All right, we use GG chat to queue speakers, so you can type in queue plus to queue yourself, add yourself to the queue, or queue minus to remove it. And you can always do queue question mark to see who's in the queue. All right, let's do the introductions and reintroductions. So if you're new to the community or you haven't been active and you're rejoining the community, please feel free to unmute and introduce or reintroduce yourself. Don't be shy. All right, so we do this every meeting, so maybe you'll have the opportunity to do that next week if you don't feel comfortable doing it right now. All right, next we have announcements and reminders. Any announcements and reminders? Kalia, please.
Hey, I guess it's 2 weeks now. Convening the Digital Identity Unconference Europe in Zurich, June 7 to 9. Just like we are for IAW, we're committed to making sure it's accessible. So I've really pushed them to make sure they keep the startup and NGO tickets available. So if you haven't signed up, you want to come, now's the chance to sign up. And we are a really great list of proposed topics that you can see on the website. If you're in Europe, please join us. Thank you.
Thanks, Kalia. Any other announcements or reminders? All right, any updates on the work items? And by the way, I think in the email list earlier, there's some announcements in regards to the verifiable credentials rendering method. So we booked that for July 25th, so that we can have further discussions there as well. All right, Manu, please.
Yeah, just a question on that. Do we have to wait for that meeting to pull it into the group? It seemed to have support. There were no objections. Could we pull it into the CCG at this point, or should we wait 2 months?
Harrison, I've got no objections to pulling that in now. I think it makes sense. There's broad support and no objections to that. I would say let's pull it in now and then get a debrief on the updates in that July meeting, if that is fine with you.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think there's multiple supporters, so let's do that. Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mommy. Any other updates on the work items? All right, so let's get to the main agenda. So this week, again, we are very, very glad to invite Greg to present on the BBS for verifiable credentials in JSON LD, giving us an overview. And I think he mentioned that he would love to enlist some of the volunteers to actually help him on these efforts. So Greg, the floor is yours.
All right, let's get the screen sharing going. You don't need to see me anymore, but that's what I look like. So let's get the screen sharing, select window or screen. Oh, wait. Before I do that.
And Greg, sometimes we have technical difficulties when we're doing both video and the slide share.
I'm turning off the video. You don't need to see my face. Okay. The other thing to make it easier. There goes the slides. The slides are all available online. I just put them in the chat. And to get hands-on, we've got a demo. That I'll be using, but anybody can use because it's built with BBS and it's just a web app, a standalone single page web app. So now let's go back and do the screen share. Okay, select window or screen, credentials, allow, and let's go over to and let's make this big. So this is going to be a little different than some of the things we've done. This is a tutorial. Okay. This is a tutorial about BBS and a reminder about verifiable credentials and signatures because I've been working on our crypto suites. Not from the point of view I've been writing them. I've been working and up and out on test vectors, which are really important. So we're going to do a little review of signatures. We're going to review VCs and signatures. Then we're going to talk about what we get from BBS signatures, selective disclosure, anonymity, and unlinkability. And who am I? Okay. Let's see if we can move that thing. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, I got all those degrees from Berkeley. I've been a part-time consultant, teacher, implementer for a while. I was formerly an R&D manager at Big Telecoms and was in a startup where we did and got a cool optical switching product deployed worldwide. Lots of network standards work, IETF, OIF, ITUT. This is the optical stuff. Spent the pandemic teaching cybersecurity and web programming. I've got the big interest, big advocate on privacy and security. Okay, so those are kind of like my passions now. So, that's me. There's links to anything else here. My website, Grotto Networking. I've got all my course materials for my academic courses. If you're interested to see how I taught cybersecurity. Okay. Signatures and references. Once again, sorry for the academic focus. If you are really trying to get into signatures and understand the modern approach to cryptography, probably can't recommend more the book by Dan Bonet and Victor Shoup. And it's available for free online, and they just did an update to it for their 0.6 version. To see some of these properties of signatures in a readable fashion, we came across this paper, Taming the Many EDSAs, EDDSA signatures, and that explains some of the improved properties that you get from signatures. So what is a signature? The formal definition, it's a triple. It has key generation, a signing algorithm, and a verification algorithm. Each of these things is pretty important. I tended to forget about the key generation, but the thing is, every signature scheme has its own set of keys, and you got to be very careful to use them correctly, not reuse things. So, what is a signature? We care about these for verifiable credentials because they put the verifiable in, the verifiable credentials. The idea is somebody that doesn't have a secret key can't create a message with a signature that verifies against the public key. Okay. This is called existential forgery. Okay. You can't create a new message with a signature that verifies. Okay. There's the signing algorithm, the verification. It shouldn't be able to do that. In addition, to make it hard for the cryptographers to come up with these schemes is we allow the adversaries to see signatures on as many different types of credentials as they like. And we say you can see as many of those, but you still shouldn't be able to come up with a valid signature unless you have the secret key. This is called existential unforgeability under a chosen message attack to be formal. Okay? You can go further. There's something called strong unforgeability. Okay? Which means you can't find a new signature on an old message without knowing the secret key. Okay? So, of our two schemes, of our two current schemes for verifiable credentials, EDDSA can have this strong unforgeability, but ECDSA is not. Okay? For the details, see BNS chapter 19. Okay? A signature is binding. This is another nice property. If it's impossible for the signer to claim later that it signed a different message. Some of these properties came out as desirable after the cryptocurrencies and the blockchain things, and people were finding any way they could to figure out how to cheat on the blockchains and such like that. And so people found these ways around and attacked the blockchain and the cryptocurrencies. Further, there's something called a strongly binding signature, okay, where the signature is binding to the public key. Okay, so these are forms of what is called non-repudiation. Okay. So there's different levels of security properties the signature should have, but that existential unforgeability is the basics. Now, I hope I'm not missing any questions because I have myself on full screen. We're good, right? Good. Okay, and I'm watching the time. I'm doing a single monitor setup, so unlike when I teach, you don't have a little time clock going. Okay.
I'll monitor the question queue, so don't worry about it.
Yeah. Okay. Currently for VCs, we have three crypto suites, I think if I got this right, that are in working draft status. Okay. So we have EDDSA. I've just got a bunch of test vectors in. PR request was approved and went in for that. I've got some that I have not put in yet for ECDSA. What's the difference between these? ECDSA has been around longer. They're hardware implementations. Okay. I know the new FIPS document that just came out also has EDDSA, but ECDSA is very important to have around because there's a lot of stuff already out there. And the new kid on the block, BBS. So, down to the bits and bytes, okay? I told you there's three pieces, the key generation, and people, particularly with this post-quantum stuff coming up, people care about how big are the keys, okay? It's not just the signature size, but it is the key size. So, our example with EDDSA, which is very efficient, the secret key is 32 bytes long, and the public key, which actually is something called a group element in an elliptic curve, blah, 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 okay, is actually quite small too, 32 bytes. If you look at post-quantum cryptography, you'll find that the key sizes can get quite large. Okay. Now, given a message, M, okay, this is the down to the byte level part of a signature. We look at messages, just a bunch of bytes. We produce a signature, okay, where it's got two pieces to it. What we care about is the total length of the signature is only 64 bytes. You'll find with both ECDSA, EDDSA, the signatures are quite small, okay? So these signature schemes, that's why these are the most popular signature schemes now, because the signatures, the keys that you have to keep around and the signatures themselves are quite small, okay? So quite efficient, okay? And particularly EDDSA is very fast, very efficient, and some folks in one of the papers referenced proved that by doing a few extra checks, we can get all of those nice security properties. Okay, and so that'll be going into the security consideration sections of our crypto suite. That's a PR to be written. Okay. Security, these signature suites work with bytes. The keys are a bunch of bytes. The messages are a bunch of bytes. The signatures are a bunch of bytes. Okay? We've got to apply these to verifiable credentials, and we have to do it correctly. Okay? Because if we don't do it correctly, you leave holes for exploitation. So what do we protect? The unsigned credential. But also, very important, is we have to protect the options related to cryptographic parameters. Okay, so somebody can't say, hey, we didn't use any cryptography. No, no, no. We're signing this. We're going to protect that information to make sure. What additional tools do we generally need when we apply these things to VCs? We need some kind of, if we're talking about JSON, a JSON canonicalization algorithm. And we usually use cryptographic hashes in some way or form. Sometimes those are built into signature schemes. Sometimes we use them before we go into the signature scheme. So let's take a look. Ooh, very big. Okay, so here's an example credential taken from our document. Okay. So we want to sign this credential. This is unsigned. So we want to protect this. We want to sign this thing. We want a digital signature on it. In addition to signing that, though, we want swiped the wrong way, and it tried to go someplace else. Okay. In addition to protecting the credential, we want to protect and ensure that nobody can lie about what type of data integrity proof? What crypto suite are we using? When this thing was created? Verification method. All these things are what we call the proof options. Okay? So we're going to protect these things too. What do I mean by that? We're going to include this as stuff we sign. So, how do our signature crypto suites work, at least for EDDSA and ECDSA? Well, we run one of these canonicalization algorithms, either JCS or RDF, on the unsigned VC. We do that with the configuration options. We take these cryptographic hash things, which take a long message and give you a fixed length output. We combine those things together, and we actually sign the output of that combined set of hashes. Okay. That becomes our message. So that means we have to have a good signature algorithm. We got to know how we're canonicalizing things. And we also have to make sure it's a good hash algorithm. All those things, we got to make it very clear. The cryptographer people can read our documents, see examples easily, and say, yeah, you're doing that the right way. Okay? And so that's essentially, very quickly, what we do in our crypto suite documents to produce something that looks like this. Verifiable credential. It's got all the credential stuff. We've got the proof that includes all that proof option stuff, data integrity proof, crypto suite information proof purpose. And right here at the end, nicely encoded in a BTC blah, blah, blah encoding where we convert from bytes to something that we can put into text is our signature. Okay. So that's an example of signing. Now, what does BBS do for us? Okay. First of all, BBS doesn't stand for Brief Beautiful Signature. It's actually the name of the original academic work of the authors Dan Bonet, Xavier Boyan, and I don't want to butcher Sachman's name, but I probably just did. These guys first described the scheme. Okay. References. Of course, there's the draft. Okay. Which is a good place to go. And I do have to thank Vasilios Kalos, who, when I was working through and coming up with my implementation, part of what's really good about here is we have good test vectors and we check them. And when somebody had issues with trying to verify, very helpful group over at DIF, IETF that were working on this. It's like, No. We've got a mistake here. This is where your error is. Very helpful. Complete set of test vectors. Great for people trying to, okay. And if we do a more advanced discussion about BBS at a later time, I'm sure we can try and get Vasilios and some of the other guys. I know Brent Sundell was on this call. He's one of the early advocates for BBS and has a nice blog post about it from way back. Okay. So that's our standard. However, just like with EDDSA, as things started approaching standardization, some of the academic folks took a second look and they've got better results, optimizations for us. So we've been working with a group out of University of Washington up in Washington State. They've got some optimizations and additional security proofs for us, just like there's more advanced proofs of security for EDDSA, which we're rolling into our VC document, okay? The original document that we base this standard on is this paper from 2016. Caution, these are both hard reads, okay? Now, we have a demo, okay? Where we're going to actually go through, okay, signature creation, single, what's all the rest of this? We're going to see what the rest of that is about, okay? This closely mirrors what we do with our test vectors, okay? So hence, we're doing something that we tell people never, ever to do. We've got private keys out floating around in the open. We do this when we work on these specs, in our VC specs, in the IETF spec, because people need to test these things. But the biggest thing about these things, Professor Modon, is keeping these keys secure. So we throw around random keys in our test vectors and such like that. Note that in reality, you never do this, okay? So just my caveat, okay? So this thing uses, like we do in our test vectors, in our various specs, hex representation for all fields except messages because I want the messages readable, which are UTF text. Okay. I use JSON to hold the information at various stages, just like we do with our test vectors. These are not VPs or VCs. Okay. This is just for demo purposes. JSON is just a happy way to get test vectors around, okay? And we're just using a simple list of BBS messages. There is more work, okay, to get BBS applied to a verifiable credential than what my demo shows. My demo is highlighting BBS, not the process that we have to take to go and apply BBS to a verifiable credential. Okay, so what are its fundamental properties? It has strong unforgeability. Okay, so it's got those good properties, the security properties that we want to have, a little bit stronger than ECDSA. It's got selective disclosure. The scheme allows the signer to sign multiple messages and produce a single constant size output signature from which a holder can select which of the, quote, messages, okay, to reveal later. Ah. It's got something called unlinkable proofs and proof of possession, okay? This is the formal language from the IETF draft. To understand it, we're going to demonstrate these things, okay? So I'm not going to read those in detail. Okay. What does this look like from the bits and bytes point of view? It's a little bigger. The random secret key is 32 bytes. The public key is a lot bigger, three times, but still, remember, a small JPEG photo will be a couple hundred K bytes. So when we're talking about the signature sizes for elliptic curve-based things, and this is elliptic curve-based, ECDSA, EDDSA, the signature sizes and the key sizes are small, okay? So you can do a lot with these things, okay? And so worrying about too much about bits and bytes, we want to do things optimally, okay? The signature size, okay, is 112 bytes, okay, so that's bigger than the 64 bytes. The new optimization results gives us 80 bytes. Signatures are small. So this is why some of this stuff is also being looked at by IoT people, because the signature that the IoT, even if it has a bunch of different sensors and you want selective disclosure of sensor reading, the message it's going to send, has to send, is small. Okay. So let's go over to the demonstration. So I've got a random key. I've got a public key. In a more advanced discussion, we'll talk about what we should use this feature of BBS called the header. Okay. But I have here a sequence of messages. I was faking a driver's license for a tree in Northern California. Okay, so we have a bunch of different properties. First name, last name, address, date of birth, height, no eyes, brown bark, green needles, etc. We can create a signature. You can add us more messages if you like here. You can remove a message. Okay, let's just show. Okay, so we click create signature. Oopsies. Let's reload. Create signature. Okay, so what did we do? We get a signature. What is it? It's a bunch of bytes. Okay. So we have a pub now. If somebody's going to use this for something like verify it, we need the public key, we need the headers, we need, all the separate messages and the signature. If we want to verify the signature, okay, we have to have the public key, we have all our messages, we can process that as JSON, we can click verify. Now, let's say the tree has an issue and he wants to pretend that he's taller than his brother and he's 297 feet, not 296 feet. That's what happens when you hit the wrong button. Okay. Process the JSON. Verify the signature. It doesn't verify, right? That's the kind of thing we expect from signatures. people mess with the information it shouldn't verify. So back to its original form. Okay. So basic signatures. Okay. So what? Okay. Well, if we want to do selective disclosure, and we're doing a full VC model, we have an issuer, a holder, and verifier. Okay, we have a three-step model. Selective disclosure comes in that the holder doesn't want to reveal everything. Okay, so the issuer signs a VC, holder verifies the signed VC, then the holder selects what to disclose. Okay, which messages in BBS terminology. So let's take a look. So, selective disclosure. Now, let's go back for a sec. Do I have my caveat? How are we doing time-wise? Okay-ish. Okay. Selective disclosure. There's multiple different approaches to selective disclosure. Okay. Probably the most straightforward approach is break up your VC into a bunch of different messages. Okay. Sign each individual message. Okay. Your overall signature for the combination is just the number of messages times the signature size. That's not what happens with BBS. BBS gives us a fixed signature size, no matter how many messages. Okay. Another approach, which we've heard of, I think we had the presentation on Gordian envelopes. They're based on a Merkle hash tree. You get a signature, single signature for the tree. The presentation cost is general overhead plus a hat. Oops, sorry. This has basically a single signature for the whole tree. The costs in both the Merkle and the BBS come when you do your selective disclosure. You have to reveal or give the verifier something for each undisclosed message. So you either pay up front when you individually sign. Okay. I know this is quick. Okay. Just giving just an overview. But with BBS, just like with Merkle hash trees, basically for each undisclosed message, it's part of the signature, you have a little price to pay. Okay. For hash trees, it depends on the hash you're using, but basically it's the number of undisclosed plus the hash size. For BBS, it's the number of undisclosed times 32 bytes for our current implementation. Okay. So, we have a tree going into a bar and needs to prove their ID. Okay. So, let's say they're going to have includes their picture and their date of birth. Okay. So we're going to generate a signature. Oh, we got a proof. It's got, what does it have in it down here? We've got only two pieces of message. Okay. Now we come to the proof verification. Professor, I mean, Greg, what's going on here? Sorry, we've got a terminology collision. Okay. Both BBS and verifiable credentials use the term proof and signature, but they use them in very different ways. Okay. So I'll use the term BBS signature and BBS proof. BBS proof is kind of like the secondary signature or the disclosed signature. Okay. So that's why I was like, what's this terminology? Oh, BBS. We select the messages we want to include, then we create a proof on it. This isn't to be confused with a general VC proof, it would be included in the verifiable presentation as part of the proof, okay? But it is a derived thing. It's derived from the first signature, okay? Now, let's check that this thing can verify. So what's in it? Oh, I forgot. We got these nice things to make things bigger. So what are we giving them? Well, we're telling them what things are being disclosed. We have some overhead. Okay. Giving them the date of birth and the encoded photo. Okay. We can click verify. Verify is true. What if they are lying about their age? Maybe they want to not be as old as they say they are. Okay. If they change their age and then they try and send that proof to somebody, it won't verify. This is as good as a signature. It's this derived signature thingy. That's not a formal, that's not formal terminology. It's a derived signature thingy. But that is our proof. Okay, so it works like a signature, okay, and it verifies. So we're able to select, we've got selective disclosure, pretty efficient with our selective disclosure. So far, so good. You can include how many ever different things you like. So now the tree can go to as many bars as possible. And it didn't have to reveal its name, its address, or anything. Okay. And we see the kind of extra information that we have to put into this. Disclosed index. We've got another type of header called a presentation header. When we get to, not this talk, a talk about how you apply BBS to verifiable credentials, we'll talk about how what we're going to use the header for and the presentation header for. That's not this talk. That may not be this presenter either. Okay. So when you read these documents, we have to remember there's this collision in terminology. Okay. And we'll see that there's different core operations. Okay. So for verifiable credential, the issuer issues a VC. We use a BBS signature, okay, during that process. The holder creates a verifiable presentation, and it's going to use a BBS proof, okay? We're going to use this proof gen procedure, okay? Okay. Now, when the holder creates the VP, here's where the magic comes in. It doesn't have the issuer's secret key. It's not even using its own secret key or anything. All it has to have is the original signature and the issuer's public key. That is amazing. That's amazing cryptography. Okay. The verifier can verify that the subset of information contained in the verifiable presentation has not been modified by validating the proof contained in the presentation against the issuer's public key, right? That's what we want to know. We want to check it against the issuer. No holder keys are involved. Not saying we can't. Okay, that's something else. That's one of these advanced topics. There's something called BBS with bound signatures that's being kicked around. Okay, but that's a different thing. No holder keys, that is amazing. Okay, and we saw it. So, and you can go and do and mess with the demo, right? At each of the different steps, we saw that if you mess with the information after signature creation, it will not verify. We've got strong unforageability. Yay. Okay. So, straight out of the document, we've got sign, secret key, public key, messages, blah. Okay. Verify public key signature messages. Okay. Proof, or this derived signature thingy. Just the public key, the signature we received, the messages, and some information about what we're disclosing. Okay. Or what we choose to disclose. Okay. And proof verify, used by the verifier with the issuer's public key. Now, if that was it, that would be amazing enough. But wait, there's more. We get something called anonymity and unlinkability. Okay. So, the issuer signs the VC. Go back to the demo. Create a signature. Click the button. Click the... Oh, signature doesn't change when I click the button. What does that mean? A signature signs by a cryptographic signature. By their security properties, these tend to be unique. Yeah, it's hard to come up with another signature on the same messages. Uniqueness is good. Uniqueness is bad in some ways. When a holder creates a VP that includes the signed VC, the cryptographic signature is included. If the holder sends this to multiple verifiers, those signature verify, they conclude. What's the picture? So, an issuer, issues a signature to the holder. The holder sends the credential to various places. But what if the verifiers share data amongst themselves? They collude, Verifier to verifier collusion. That means the issuer can be tracked. But wait, does this really happen? It's not any real information. It's just the signature. Yeah, but the signature is really unique. So even though the tree went into a bar and it only disclosed its photo or an age, the signature can help identify that it went to different multiple bars, Does this really happen? Yeah, all the time, This is what people do to keep track of you even though third-party cookies are going out. They fingerprint your browser, So go look at EFF, cover your tracks. Like I said, this is from Teaching Cybersecurity, beginning course. Make people go and see how unique their browser is at Cover Your Tracks. Mozilla talks a little bit more about browser fingerprinting. And if you want to fingerprint people visiting your site, you can go to NPM. You can get a JavaScript library that'll help you do it, and that gets 300,000 downloads a week. So it happens, So BBS and anonymity, unlinkable proofs. The proofs generated by the scheme are known as what's the zero knowledge, this or that or the other thing? Lots of theory, let's take a look. So, when I went to create my signature, nothing happened when I re-clicked create signature. Let's go to proof generation. This tree is going to go into multiple bars, and let's say they really don't care about their photo, but they want to know if they're from a local park, state or national park, to see if they can get a big drink of water because we have trouts. Now, we're going to generate our proof. Oh. Well, that makes sense. I changed the information. So the proof should change, right? That makes sense. But let's say they go into another bar and they click generate proof. Oh. The proofs generated by BBS appear random. Cryptographically, in a cryptographic sense, These proofs, when I create each one of them, they're unlinkable. There's nothing about them that ties each to each other. Part of the magic of this whole zero knowledge proof stuff. Okay. But you can see it here. Okay. And this is what takes some effort. That's what we mean by unlinkable. Okay. Now, this is a harder area because this proof value, nice general randomish number thing, cryptographically proven unlinkable. But don't forget, we're revealing information up here. Okay. This is like detailed information about their date of birth. Okay. So when we start talking about unlinkable proofs in anything that has this features, we have to put it into the general context of how much of other information are you giving away and how much are you potentially leaking? Okay. How are we doing time wise? We're about there. Now, so that's unlinkable proofs. What did proof of possession mean? Why did they say that? Well, that's the thing we just checked that. Okay. Don't need to do this. We did this. That unlinkable proofs. We understand. What did the proof of possession map? The proof of possession thing, that hard to understand statement, means that the proof bundle given, the thing we put in the verifiable presentation, behaves like a signature. Okay. Theoretically, they say this is proof of possession that I have a signature that was signed by blah. Okay. But from our point of view, verifiable presentations means that our proof works just like a signature. Okay. So we have it somewhat in a nutshell here. We've got the unlinkable proofs. Okay. Nice feature. Okay. They appear essentially random. Okay. But it doesn't prevent correlation on disclosed message. So us, the verifiable credential, verifiable presentation people, when we go and use BBS, we're going to have to take care and also advise people using BBS if they want these capabilities. What information might we be leaking and the fact that you're giving away information that can be used. Okay. So later on, if you'd like to try out these things, here's some steps, try modifying the messages and things like that. And how does this all work? Okay. This is proven cryptographically. People have used academic proofs and such like that. At its heart, to sum up, it uses the hardness of what's known as the discrete log problem. It uses things called elliptic curves to keep all these values to reasonable sizes. And then it uses additional magic of something called elliptic curve pairings or bilinear maps to get us this selective disclosure and unlinkable properties. Okay. I know this was quick. But hopefully this gives you this tutorial level overview of what we get. Oops. Okay. From BBS and why we want to use them for verifiable credentials. Future advanced discussions. Look at the list and we can also see what folks might want to hear about in the future. Okay. Back to you guys. I think we kept it close to our time. And let me stop screen share.
Thank you, Greg. Yeah, this is an amazing presentation. Learned a lot from here. Any questions? Please, Bob.
Yeah, my apologies if this is really dumb, but if the proof bundle includes the public key, why can't people just, doesn't the disclosure of the public key ruin the anonymity?
The public key is of the issuer. So, state of California issues me a driver's license. I want to prove that I am of age to go get that drink at the bar. They're going to use the issuer's public key, but not my public key. This is not my personal DID that goes with my driver's license. This is from the state of California. So that's why I was trying to remind folks that the issuer has their secret and public key. The thing that you might be wondering is like, wait, if somebody else gets this signature, couldn't they pretend to be me and have their credential verified against the public key of the original issuer? Okay. So, but you are right. Every little bit, like the public key would leak information, would like reveal that if this is a driver's license, this is a state of California driver's license. So think of the anonymity from the holder's perspective, not the issuer's perspective.
Right. I got it. Okay. I understand. Thank you.
Cool.
Right, next, PLT3.
I think you mean me, is that right, Harrison?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I think one of the things that often is confused in this BBS selective disclosure is whether the properties that you do not wish to disclose are encrypted but sent or elided from the credential that is actually presented to the endpoint. Can you elaborate on that?
It is very similar to the elided, okay? Because it's very much like the Gordian envelopes, because underneath how this kind of works is they are, for each message, you're doing a hash. They're encoding that in these groups and such like that. And so when you send the proof, you're basically sending somewhat like a hash value. It's randomized more than you would in like a Gordian envelope type of elision, mm-hmm. but it is really like removing it and substituting something like a hash, but it's more randomized, because that's how we get the unlinkability.
Right. I just wanted to clarify whether they ended up with the whole credential and those pieces that you've left are to be disclosed, visible, to the recipient, and the rest of it's still there, but simply in an encrypted form, which potentially could be worked on.
Yeah, no, it's not even in an encrypted form. It's hashed and mapped to the Curvia group and randomized. It's
got it.
I mean, it's kind of there, but it's not in a way that we can see it.
Right. It still takes some space, but it's not the entire. It's not what was in the original information.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you.
It doesn't even take space. It gets mixed in, so it's even harder to get it out.
Any other questions? And Greg, sorry, do you mind actually also go a little bit deeper into the trade-off of different selected disclosure mechanisms like BBS versus earlier you talked about hash-based like Gordian envelope? Like, what are the trade-offs?
Yeah, this really needs more than one slide. I'm sorry about that. And we may want to have a whole talk on it. Let's get. Basically, selective disclosure.
Maybe I can schedule a follow-up conversation on this topic
yeah,
of different options. Yeah,
because I look at it from a theoretical point of view of like three main classes, which, okay, if you sign individual messages, you have to have a signature for each message. So your overall signature size is M times the number of messages times the size of the signature. So for EDDSA, it'd be M times 64. Okay. However, when you go to disclose, you don't have any extra. Okay. You just send with what you disclose with the signature that goes with it. BBS and the Merkle hash, on the other hand, they have one small fixed size signature for arbitrary number of messages, but you have to, when you do your proof derivation, you have to say something about the undisclosed messages. You have to have some kind of filler. That's the intuition. Very different between the two, but the sizing is about the same. Okay. Undisclosed messages. So my proofs got bigger. What would go for BBS versus if I have lots of individually signed messages and I'm only revealing 2 out of 100, it's only going to be like 102 times 64 bytes, you know? So it's important. This is an important thing because selective disclosure is important and we need to understand the trade-offs between these things because BBS can do some things that others can't at all, but then it's got its trade-offs because we saw about that unlinkable anonymity. That may not be achievable based on what you're revealing. Okay, so I say all these approaches are pretty good. So if we want to talk more and evaluate these things, it's a good topic.
Cool. Thank you. No, I will take you up on that. I'll talk to you offline about scheduling a topic on this, a presentation on this topic. So thank you. Thank you.
Okay. And take a look, if folks want to take a look at the slides that say advanced topics, if that's where we could try and pull in like Facilis and some of those, and here's the link to the demo just in case. All these things, I'm sure, will be sent again by Harrison in case you didn't get the links. But they're all up on my website, easy to get to.
All right. Thank you, Greg. I learned a lot. So this is an amazing presentation, and thanks a lot. And I think this concludes today's W3C CCG meeting. I will send those notes, links, and also the links to the slides and the demo. In the follow-up email to the email, agenda email that I sent out earlier. So thanks a lot.
Okay.